You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Movie Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. And I am here with Brian, you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. You can find the show at The Comic Roast or on Facebook at www.thecomic.facebook.com or something / The Comic Roast, I believe.
Sounds about right.
Nailed it. And don't forget to check out reviewandroast.com, where we write reviews for movies, TV shows, comic books, regular books, video games, board games.
And all of our podcasts are generally up there at this point, or getting up there and so on. So
yes,
that too. You can find a lot of our podcasts on Review and Roast as well.
Or you can find them all for sure at comicroast.com.
Boom.
Nailed it. All right, the movie we are going to be discussing today is the new Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, The Revenant. A frontiersman on a fur trading expedition in the 1820s fights for survival after being mauled by a bear and left for dead by members of his own hunting team. Directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu, written by Mark Smith and Alejandro González Iñárritu, and starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, Will Poulter, and a bunch more.
Leaves a transmitter, circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
So this has like been, I guess, the buzz of the week, talk of the town movie ever since it came out, because everyone's like, oh my god, Leonardo DiCaprio is totally going to get an Oscar this time. I hope he doesn't, because this movie is, I don't understand why people like it.
I think he will win. I think it's a shoe-in at this point. I almost feel like they cleared any of the real competition off the map by not nominating people to ensure that he wins, which is really stupid because he's got more than enough talent to win it even in a really good year. But looking at the other nominees, I was kind of like, yeah, that guy's good, or yeah, that part looks pretty good, but really? I know, because I know, like, Will Smith, there was a lot of talk that he should get nominated for Concussion. He didn't. And, I mean, I've seen clips, and it looks like one of those performances where you would think, oh, Will Smith is definitely going to be...
I'm surprised he doesn't have one at either. He's got quite a few very strong roles, but...
Because he's got a lot of bad ones in between.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know.
You're only nominated for one movie, not your whole career.
No, I know, but he doesn't, like, do a lot of prestige movies. He'll do one, and then he'll do, like, five Men in Black movies, and... I don't know.
Nothing
After Earth. And then he does Before Earth and Dinosaur Puncher. And then they're like, oh, that's right. Will Smith does these stupid movies. And then he does one really good one again. And you're like, oh, my God, Will Smith, he's good again.
Yeah, but it's not based off your career. It's based off a specific role of one movie. So, I mean, it doesn't...
I feel like they soft-pedaled this category to ensure that Leonardo was the front runner. And I don't feel like he needed the help. I doubt that's actually what happened. But it looks to me that's what they did.
Yeah, you know what we should do? Maybe next year, maybe this year, who knows? We'll have our own award show on this podcast. Nailed it.
The Roasties.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it next soon. It's eventually in the future of this lifetime. Okay, so the basis of this movie is just like the synopsis says. He's part of a hunting team gathering pelts and furs to bring back to trade and make money, blah, blah, blah. And while they are, the movie starts out, they're at camp, they're getting ready to pack up and move on when they're attacked by Indians.
Pawnee Indians, actually.
Is that a Parks and Rec joke? Or
That's the Pawnee tribe.
Okay.
That
I wasn't sure if you were trying to be funny or not, but, so.
Well, the Pawnee are looking for the chief's missing daughter or whatever.
Who was kidnapped by a different hunting party, it seems like. So they rush out of there, and they lose a lot of men in the process. And then, Leonardo DiCaprio I turned the page off. I don't remember his name in this movie.
Hugh Glass.
That's it, Hugh Glass. He's kind of like, lack of a better term, the Dances with Wolves white guy of the film, where, you know, he spent a lot of his time living with the Indians. He married an Indian girl. So he knows their ways. He knows how to track. He's kind of like their guide. So he's telling them, basically, we need to get off this boat. We need to get off the river, and we need to cut through the forest where we're less likely to be seen and we're not out in the open. So they finally, after much arguing, they follow his advice. They get off the boat and they camp for the night. And the very next morning is the one where, you know, everyone talks about this bear scene, because the grizzly bear. And it's actually quite, it is a pretty, it's really, I thought the scene itself was well done. It was pretty believable. It was pretty gruesome. But, I mean, that the rest of the movie is, you know, them deciding whether or not they're going to leave him to die because he's not going to make it, or if they should carry him along, and, you know. And the rest of the movie is him dragging himself around, grunting, and about 45 minutes of landscape shots.
Well, because they think he's going to die, and Tom Hardy's character, John Fitzgerald, already has issue with Hugh Glass bringing his son around, because his son is half white, half Indian, so... He's, you know, typical hillbilly racist guy. He's like, oh, we're going to bring this half-breed with us?
Right, yeah.
So he already, like, wants the kid gone, and he wants Hugh Glass gone as well. So when they're trying to carry him around, they're like, we can't carry this guy up, like, icy mountain ridges and stuff. We're going to be slipping, falling, and we're all going to die. We have to think of the party as a group, and, you know, but we also have to acknowledge the fact that this guy is a large part of why we've made it this far, so let's at least honor him with a proper burial when he passes. So they leave Tom Hardy's character like the worst guy ever, albeit the best character as far as acting role, and just everything about Tom Hardy was so good in this movie. We leave him and this weenie, who I can't remember his name, Bridger.
He was a kid.
Yeah, he was like a teenager. They leave this guy Bridger, who's like unsure of himself.
It's his first expedition.
Yeah, and John Fitzgerald, and pretty much as soon as the rest of the party is gone, John Fitzgerald's ready to like cut and run. But you know, the kid keeps saying, "No, we owe Mr. Glass. We got to stay by his side." Yada yada yada. So after a day or two, John Fitzgerald's pretty much like, "Yeah, this is bullshit. I'm not sitting here to die." Whether or not that was actually going to happen is irrelevant. He's like, I'm not going to sit here and die for this moron. So he tries to finagle a way of allowing Hugh Glass to be euthanized. He's like, yeah, blink if you want to die. That's like going, oh, if you want to die, exist for a second. Oh, look at that. You just did. All right, we'll bury you now. So... he does that, and in the process, he also gets into a thing with Hugh Glass's son and decides, like, ah, you know what? I'm going to murder your son, too, by the way. So he kills the kid, leaves him laying by the river, and then he uses his erroneous excuse to bury Hugh Glass. Doesn't even really bury him, just kind of throws him in a hole and puts a couple of clumps of dirt on him and then leaves. And then the rest of the movie from that point is, you know, Leonardo rises.
That and like some videographer's landscape resume as they shoot 10 seconds of the stars and 7 seconds of the mountain range, and then a close up on some ants for about 12 seconds. Like, if you cut all of that out of a movie, you could easily shave 25-30 minutes off of this movie.
Those shots are a great slideshow for like a screensaver.
They serve a purpose in movies that do them. In this movie, they don't serve a purpose. Like, usually when something epic happens in a movie, you cut to a scene like that because it gives the audience a chance to, like, just kind of dwell on what just happened before the story moves on. They do it in this movie about every 4 minutes, and it is super annoying. Not to mention, once that's all done, it seems like every time any actor is on the screen, the camera is practically up their nose. Like, you don't need to be that close to everybody. Everything's like a low angle, but right in your face shot. It's you know, and then there's times later in the movie, where, you know, after Leonardo can start walking again, where it's like, you know, he's trying to stay hidden from the Indians while he tracks this hunting team who went to, you know, whatever fort they went to. And they have him walking down the middle of, like, a valley. There's no cover, and he's leaving tracks in the snow everywhere he can. It's like, you're doing a terrible job of staying hidden for somebody who's supposed to be an expert.
Well, he said after he got back to the fort, like, I'm at the point where I'm not afraid to die. It's like, okay.
Yeah, but he's still trying to get vengeance on the man who murdered his kid.
Right.
But, I mean, God. I mean,
I think
let's take the funny route. What did you like about the movie?
Tom Hardy. Awesome. I'm not going to say, oh, this is the performance of a lifetime. Tom Hardy's pretty much good all the time.
Yeah.
I've yet to see a film where I'm like, God, Tom Hardy really mailed it in.
Watch.
Every time I see this guy, I'm like, he is like one of the guys right now. He's just so good. He's able to shift and morph into different characters. Like, he's like a cross between a more audible version of Bane with a total hillbilly in this movie. And
yeah,
he does it in a way where it's not like, oh, he's totally goofy and weird. Like, you buy him as this total redneck, racist, probably animal enthusiast. And I don't mean like, oh, he likes to own dogs. I mean, he sees a pig and he's like, hole's a hole.
Wow.
But he's got, like, the matted hair and, like, the big patches of hair missing and
the
crappy comb.
Well, it's
because
he was scalped.
His character is the scum of the earth.
No,
but
absolutely.
He was my favorite character in the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
The problem lies in he's on the screen and you're like, now the movie's good. And then he goes away and you're like, and then 45 minutes before you see him again.
Yeah, a lot of it is just, you know, Here's a scene of Leonardo laying in a hole. Here's a scene of him dragging himself across this campsite. Here's a scene of him grunting as he pulls himself up a hill. It's like, and then when you read the story of what actually happened, like, it didn't go down like that.
Not even close.
I mean, the last five minutes, well, we'll get there later.
We'll get there in a bit. But I also want to say the guy from Ex Machina.
Yes.
What's his name?
Domhnall Gleeson.
Domhnall Gleeson was also excellent. Like, he's fast becoming an actor. I'm like, ooh, he's in a movie? Let's go see it.
Yeah. Like I said, I thoroughly enjoyed Ex Machina. I thoroughly enjoyed Frank, which is another movie he was in, although I think he should have kept that beard because it was awesome. And he was really good. Like, and this is, I'm not trying to take anything away from, you know, Leonardo's Oscar nomination here or whatever, but everybody who was in the movie when they were in it, they were all pretty good. The problem lies in the fact that there's so much screen time where nothing is happening, or there's nobody on the screen, or it's just, you know, an inaudible drooling on himself Leonardo DiCaprio with a camera shoved up his face. It's just, you know, and I know that Brian's not the biggest fan of Birdman. I personally think that movie was amazing, and I think that since that movie got such praise, I feel like this director was like, I can do whatever I want now. Here's this. Blah.
Well, I looked up his IMDb filmography, and he did that movie Babel with Brad Pitt like 10 years ago,
right?
Which I heard from multiple people was so boring, it was dreadful. And before that, he did 21 Grams with Sean Penn, which I also heard was a movie that took forever to get to the point, and then when it did, it wasn't worth sitting through. I know there are going to be people who are going, are you kidding me? Those two films are amazing. I'll grant you they may be. I've heard
Babel was decent. I've actually never seen it, though.
I've never seen it. I've never seen 21 Grams, but I've been told by several people avoid at all costs. So having seen Birdman, which I thought was good but not great, and this movie, which was, we'll tell you in a little bit, I don't really feel the need to see 21 Grams or babble at this point.
Yeah, you know, I suppose I should get to what I liked about it, but
do it.
When there were actors on the screen, it was pretty good, and the final fight of the movie was actually pretty cool too. But of course, you know, it was like a 2-hour snore fest that led up to like a 4-minute battle that was just decent. I wouldn't say it was the greatest battle I've ever seen in my life, but it was pretty cool parts. That's about all I could say positively about this movie.
I just think it's weird that the guy who made this, that Alejandro Iñárritu or whatever his name is, he's Mr. I hate superhero movies. They're all right-wing drivel. And Birdman was about a guy who used to play a superhero, and this movie's about a guy who apparently has otherworldly strength and abilities that can cross miles of territory with big chunks of his back missing.
Funniest thing was, when I was getting ready for work a week or so ago, I had the radio on, and they were talking to the guy who, I forget what the hell station I was listening to, but the host of the show was like, he's like, yeah, I went and saw this over the weekend, and let me tell you, that's 2.5 hours of my life I will never get back. You're so much bull. He just started going on, and I was like, first off, you got this guy running around half naked and freezing in weather. Then he jumps into a frozen lake a million times, never once gets hypothermia. This movie is, I'm like, man, you're bringing up points I didn't even think of. I like you.
No, I thought about that too. I thought, okay, he just got mauled by a bear. He's had a fever that should have killed him by now, but for some reason he powers through the fever and starts to crawl over vast, vast spreads of terrain. Then he comes upon a river when he's at the point where he's barely able to stand. And oh, he dives in, somehow swims away from a tribe of Indians who are lining both sides of the river. I don't know how he slipped by them in his giant fur coat splashing all over the place. But then he goes down like a mile full of just jagged rocks. And oh, he gets up and walks away from that. Then he falls off a cliff and through a tree and he breaks his neck, but he somehow snaps it back on and he's walking around butt naked in the fucking blizzard. Are you joking?
You know what else? And this might, maybe it was just me, but I noticed, because I always look for stupid details in movies that I feel should be there. Like, you're in the middle of the wilderness. You're outside. It's freezing temperatures. Why can't I see your breath?
Okay. I didn't even. This movie had so many plot holes and flaws. I can't even, like, piece them all together at this point. But every time I hear a new one, I'm like, yep, I remember that.
Yeah. So, do we really need to ask what we didn't like about this? Because I feel like
why not?
All right, what did you not like about this movie?
I found somebody at work forwarded me an article of the story of the guy Hugh Glass compared to the movie. If you read the actual story of Hugh Glass, some of the basic details are correct. He was part of a hunting party. He was attacked by a bear. He did survive. There was a guy named John Fitzgerald that he did hunt down. Although, from what I recall the article, they didn't really get into specifically why he was going after John Fitzgerald. The trek took 9 months. It was covering 1,500 miles of terrain. He did actually arrive at the fort where he was headed towards, after many stops and detours for information, etc., supplies, food, so on and so forth. However, the party that he was looking for knew way ahead of time that he was coming. Yes, they were all shocked, but they also said, well, let's not sit around. They left and were long gone before he showed up. And when he did show up, the handful of people were there like, yep, they left like 3 months ago. Oops.
I could have swore that.
Nothing happened.
That I read that, and then after that, he spent another year or two looking for them, and then when he finally confronted John Fitzgerald, like, he didn't do anything about it. They were just, by that point, he was just so like, whatever, man, it happened. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't know. I read it like a week and a half ago. So.
And they said all the accounts of all these superhuman things were just things that he essentially told people he did. So he very well could have fallen off a cliff through a tree and landed on a splattered horse that he was riding, or maybe he just lied.
Yeah.
So the story of the actual guy is stupidly ridiculous compared to this movie where he's... This movie, you could have put Wolverine in the title, and I would have been like, yeah, all right, this is the story of Wolverine. Except it would have been way more Liev Schreiber and, you know, adamantium claws and maybe General Stryker. What would it weigh? See, here's the thing. A superhero story slapped on top of this movie would have made it way better.
Like he falls off the cliff and then just flies away?
Yeah, he falls off the cliff, he gets the claws out, and he braces himself. Saves the horse, or cuts the horse open with the claws, and then
makes a parachute on the way down.
Yeah, chops off the horse's head, wears it as a mask.
Yeah, and again, you know, Mike and I were talking about it this morning, and we were both still baffled by the fact that, like, we don't understand why people A, like this movie, and B, why do people like why is this movie and Mad Max getting so like so much praise? Like, they were both terrible movies.
That was another thing. When I saw Mad Max was nominated for Best Picture, I'm like, okay. There were more than 10 movies this year. That's no excuse to put that thing. I didn't even see that movie, and it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, I Mike liked it more than I did, but even him being a Mad Max fan absolutely did not like the movie. I mean, bottom line is, the movie's entitled Mad Max. The character Mad Max is in the movie. The entire series up to that point was about him and his car. His car gets stolen 5 minutes into the movie, and he's absolutely a secondary character in that movie. It's like, how is this even... whatever. That's a whole other story. Read my review on it. I wrote it 8 months ago. All right. What would you have done differently? I'm actually going to go first on this one because we're probably going to be similar. Maybe we won't. I don't know. Easy. I would have got a different director.
That's a given. I think this guy's ego is out of... Here's the thing. All these people that hated The Hateful Eight said, oh, Tarantino's ego's just gotten too out of control. I disagree. I thought that movie was pretty close to genius.
Not only that, it's pretty much the same MO as the rest of his movies. He's not, like, trying ridiculous things in his movies and hoping that they just nail it. Like, they all kind of have that, like, broken down into different acts. They all kind of have the same feel. Like, he's had a set, I don't want to say scenario, but you know what I mean, like a set way of doing things, and he's stuck to it. Yeah. He might get better at it over time, but they all have the same feel. You can tell it's Tarantino because he has his own style. People try to copy it, but nobody can do it.
Yeah. Right. No, this guy, to me, this is him just, I feel like this is a guy, this movie's an example of a guy who stares himself in the mirror and just goes, oh, yeah. Except in movie form, because he tried to make it this spiritual journey with the whole dead wife thing and the whole...
I forgot all about that stuff.
Just all these stupid cutaways of him, you know, having conversations with his dead wife and reliving conversations with his son when he was a boy. And that part could have been effective in a better director's hands, but all I kept thinking was, if this stuff actually is accurate, a better director would have made a terrific movie. Instead, this guy, who is essentially self-masturbatory at this point, decided, no, let me handle it. I know what I'm doing, when clearly he doesn't. Or, at least in my opinion, he doesn't know how to make a movie. The story's pretty paper thin, really, when you think about it.
It's just standard revenge.
Yeah, it didn't need to be. You could have shaved a half hour off of it and, like, tweaked some parts, and it might have been a halfway decent movie. But, again, like you said, there's so much of him, like, doing mundane things and grunting while doing it. It was essentially watching some, and you can give me the whole, oh, just watching this guy devolve and then re-find him. Nah, yeah. His story at that length wasn't interesting enough to warrant all that detail.
Not to mention, like, yeah, there's, like, no indication to the passage of time in this movie at all either. So it's like one scene, he's dragging himself barely with one arm, grunting and drooling all over himself to the next campfire he's going to make for the night. And then in the very next scene, he's like walking down the fucking hill with a cane. It's like, well, okay, how much time just passed? Like, how, you have to indicate that somehow. I don't know. Maybe it was just me. But it feels like he's crawling one scene, the next scene he's walking, the next scene he's like riding a horse. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, we're making it sound like they didn't dumb this movie down enough for us. But I think what it actually is, it's the director thinking he's so smart and so clever that he's got this structure in mind that's going to totally just supersede the story as a whole, and he's going to... I got this... That movie was so annoying, like, and pretentious, and focused a lot on things that were mundane, and then drifted off of things that were actually the interesting parts of the story.
Yeah. I almost wonder, and I mean, I'm not trying to offend anybody here, but I almost wonder if people are just, they know that this guy is supposed to be like some fancy artsy director, and they know that, you know, Leonardo's up for the thing, and I wonder if people just like it because they feel like they're supposed to. I think never, nobody wants to be critical.
There's probably some of that. I think some people just like the idea of Leonardo DiCaprio in a movie because it's been a little bit. I think all the Oscar buzz has people pretty excited because, I mean, we'll get to that in a little bit, but Leonardo DiCaprio has turned in some stellar performances over the last 15 years at least. So to think that this is his first legitimate shot at winning is kind of surprising. I mean, and I know they said for What's Eating Gilbert Grape, he really should have won and whatever. But this seems like the first time where, like, it's a straight layup to the hoop at this point for him. Like, there's the other competition was like, well, we need to fill four other slots, so we'll just get to whoever.
Again, I don't want to be mean here, but I hope he doesn't win because he's so much better than this movie, and I hope that this movie doesn't win any awards because it's not worth anything.
Maybe
a weird artsy cinematography award, but even that's a stretch at this point.
I think when Straight Outta Compton gets nothing other than Best Original Screenplay and this movie's up for, like, everything else, that is a humongous snub and then some, because...
They probably just didn't want to nominate any newcomers. I mean, let's face it, most people in that movie, like, maybe had, you know, Bartender number 6 and other stuff, but they were all basically newcomers, maybe. Except Paul Giamatti. Hello. He could have got some kind of supporting nod on that.
True.
But I'm just saying. I mean, I thoroughly thought that movie was amazing. You can go back and listen to that podcast, too, I believe.
Yep.
But anywho. I think we're ready to number it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. 4?
And here's the thing. When we saw it, I gave it a 5. The more I thought about it, I'm going to go with a 3.
Oh, dude, I was so concerned when we got out because I'm like, dude, we're supposed to go podcast about this, and now I have to be the idiot that's like, I thought it was dumb. But then when we got back to the house, everybody was like, no way, that movie was terrible. Oh, good. Then I don't have to be the only one. And yeah, I was trying to give it like a 6 or a 6.5 by then, but yeah, it's like a 4. It's just terrible.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my 3. That movie was just absolute junk.
Yeah. I agree. Other than that, this wasn't part of our normal, I guess, plan for the movie roast this week. So again, we don't have.
I actually do.
Oh, you do? Yes. All right, so we have just more stuff. Though. Okay, we have a question.
Because Leonardo is the clear frontrunner to win Best Actor for this very overrated, very dull, very pompous junk, and let's face it. Fact-challenged movie, what 3 roles would you rather have seen him nominated and or, better yet, win for? Now I'll start.
I was going to say you might as well because you have had time to think about it.
Actually, I've had about 20 minutes. I thought of it on the way back here. The one he did not get nominated for, which another actor in the movie actually did win Best Supporting Actor, Calvin Candy from Django Unchained. God, the fact that he didn't even get consideration.
I agree with that.
So amazingly mind blowing to me.
I got my thing.
That is easily it's my second favorite role of his by far. I mean, that movie's loaded, top loaded with just premium talent.
Yeah.
And he stole every scene from everybody. And then we're talking about scenes where these guys were practically riffing off of each other.
Yeah.
And he's still Eddie Van Halen and a group of amateurs almost. I mean, that's how good he was in that movie.
Yeah, I actually, I'm going to agree with that and use that as one of mine as well. So I'll just, we'll just do one at a time. So you pick that, I agree. Go.
All right.
Number two.
My second one is a movie that I have seen twice. I know I'm in the minority. I don't love the movie. I think it's just okay. But I can't deny the fact that he was ridiculously outstanding in it. Wolf of Wall Street. As whatever, I can't remember the guy's name, Justin Super Awesome Shoes or whatever his name was.
Okay.
I can't stand that movie because...
No, I like that movie. I think he was awesome in it.
I think for a Martin Scorsese movie to do the whole anti-hero kind of story, the guy learns nothing. In 3 hours, all you see is this guy live this life of excess and thievery, and at the end, he goes to jail for 5 minutes, comes back out, and is like, sew me this pen. And you're like, this guy learned nothing. He's the worst. It's a movie almost celebrating the worst guy ever to walk the planet, other than maybe Hitler. But I can't deny the fact that Leonardo was ridiculously good. So.
I'll go Catch Me If You Can.
I've seen parts of that movie.
I've seen it quite a few times. And, you know, especially being opposite Tom Hanks in that movie, like, it was just really good.
I so feel dumb for not having seen it yet.
But, I mean, well, there's quite a few others you can put in there, but I definitely, you know, I wanted to pick stuff that people wouldn't expect, I guess. Because everybody would probably think, you know, The Aviator or Departed. So I wanted to go a little off the board.
All right. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to go back on the board. His portrayal of Howard Hughes was just about genius.
Oh, The Aviator was
The Aviator great. Is, I just watched it again a couple months ago. It holds up beautifully. And my first experience watching a Leonardo DiCaprio performance was Gangs of New York. And I remember going in going, I don't want to watch this moron. And then after the movie, I was like, ah, he was in that. He was actually pretty good.
That's actually going to be my...
It was The Aviator that made me go, fuck, I think I'm a fan of this guy now. Like, I think I love this guy. And, yeah, you watch The Aviator a couple times, and he's just, he's like, scary good in that movie, is Howard Hughes, so.
Well, I'm right with you, what you already said, with Gangs of New York. That movie, to me, was...
Oh, that's the one thing.
Unreal.
Well, that's the thing. Like, having seen it one or two times back when it came out, I was just like, oh, God, he's actually kind of good in this. Having watched that movie several million more times, I'm just like, yeah, it's.
And again, being opposite of Daniel Day-Lewis, who is arguably the greatest actor on the planet right now, like, it's just a powerhouse movie.
No, I said, when I watch Gangs of New York now, like, there's no doubt in my mind that the intensity and, like, the super ridiculous level of talent's always been there. It was just, like, for my first experience as a viewer of one of his movies, I was like, oh, it actually isn't that bad.
Yeah. Well, all right, there you have it. That was Movie Roast for the week. I'm your host. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. And don't forget to check out comicroast.com and reviewandroast.com. We will see you next week.
You are now leaving the world of Musings of a Geek podcast network. Stay geeky, my friends.